Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, if you remember last week, we spoke to Dr. Christian Jessen from Embarrassing Bodies. So in the spirit of equality and fairness, today I'm joined by Dr. Pixie McKenna. She's best known to us from Channel 4's Embarrassing Bodies and other shows like Freaky Eaters and The Food Hospital. But the Irish medic is also known to be very passionate about her hometown of Cork. That's probably why she's agreed to open the new I Wish Project, which promotes careers in science, technology, engineering and maths to female students from all across the Cork region. Dr. Pixie McKenna, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. First of all, do you get back here to Ireland very much now? I mean, you're 20 years now or thereabouts in England.
That makes you sound very old. I do. I'm in Ireland. I'm in Cork every 6 weeks or so, usually.
And are you home to see family and friends most of the time?
Oh, yeah.
I see. Okay, fair enough. And do you remember back in the old... I might as well stay with Cork for the moment. You used to do an awful lot of work in your father's practice. Wait, I better rephrase that. You used to do a lot of work that wasn't medical work necessarily, even though you did collect x-rays and you did man the reception, if that's the right word for it, during holidays. Do you remember those days and do you think that you were qualified to do those kind of gigs?
I'm not sure if I'd be allowed to do it now if I was 14 or 15. I think it was a great thing to do. I think it was an amazing experience, and it's all about getting experience at a young age and exposing yourself to things that challenge you, but also make you a bit more curious along a certain career path that you mightn't have thought about.
And one of the things that you might have had to do was like get repeat prescriptions together. Was there anything involved in that was other than just doing it by rote, or did you have to actually think medically in any way at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had a medical dictionary, so I used to look all kinds of stuff up, and I used to look up the drugs, so if someone had a drug, an antibiotic, for example, I'd look up what that was and why they might need that, I was very nosy.
You are very nosy, which is a good thing.
Nosy.
Very good. Okay, listen, you're taking part at this event that I mentioned earlier on there, the I Wish Project, which promotes careers in science, technology, engineering, and maths to female students from all across Cork. It's promoting all of these things. What about you? Were you always going to become a doctor because of the stuff we've just been talking about?
I think so. I mean, I was always curious from a very, very young age, and I was always, my career path was very much set from as soon as I could speak. I wanted to be a doctor. I think it's difficult because girls are, in my 20 years ago, I was in school even longer than 20 years ago. I dare to think how long ago I was in school. But people wanted to go into vocational professions, or then there was a handful of people who wanted to be nuns. Now, of course, if you go into a classroom today, they want to be on the X Factor and they want to marry a footballer and, life is totally different. And we're really hemorrhaging loads of, incredibly intelligent talent who can shape our futures, your future and my future and their own, by steering themselves into these so-called STEM careers.
Yeah. Well, was there ever a point that when you realised, well, I want to be in the medical profession, you quickly realised you were never going to be a surgeon?
Yes. There was. You're obviously aware of me mistake.
Well, I mean, I do know at one stage that I hear tell that you were at something or other and you were telling a guy about a kidney or something. He was going, really, are you sure you want to say that's a kidney? Yeah. No, it's a liver, actually, you moron.
It was an exam. Yeah, I mistook the lung I thought it was the lung, but it was actually the liver. But you know what? I mean, I suppose I'm an example of, a lot of people don't want to go into science careers. Maybe they're scared because they think everyone's really bright and intelligent. But you don't have to be the smartest kid on the block. You can find your niche. But what you don't want to do is decide automatically, I'm not going to do science, I'm not going to do maths, I'm not going to do any of that, I'm going to go down a different route. Because you really, you reduce your career opportunities massively. And we are seeing, most of the jobs coming up are really in these type of STEM careers. Businesses are looking for people with STEM qualifications. And not only does it mean that you'll get a job, but it also means you've got a massive opportunity to change the future. You could go into something like environmental science, or you could go into technology or math engineering. And, you could build, another new motorway in Ireland. You could get clean water for people in Africa. You could do so many exciting things. It's not like about standing in a lab coat and being a geek.
Okay, well then what has the telly done for you? Because you were working away successfully as a GP and you decided to go on the telly. Was it just for fun?
I was always someone who had another job while I did general practice. So I did general practice, but a day a week, I either did dermatology or sexual health. So I had a bit of a sort of, I always had something in the bag that was a little bit different, and that was upskilling me in the background. Yeah, I went on the telly. I always, as a very small child, I wanted to present the Eurovision Song Contest. It was one of my one of my ambitions. Probably, I don't really want to do that anymore. But yeah, and I got the opportunity to screen test for a show, and I thought I'd just go for the crack.
So you had that Irish malaise. You wanted to present the Eurovision Song Contest. Okay, well then let's take a look at this, because you did a thing about 10 years ago called Freaky Eaters, and you went.
So,
what happens with that? Like, I am a doctor, and I am going for a screen test. Is that it?
Yeah. So you go for a screen test, and in telly, so in medicine, nobody ever tells you you're fabulous. In telly, as you know, you work in media, everyone's fabulous. Even if you're rubbish, you're fabulous. Yeah. Everyone tells you you're amazing. Oh, you're amazing.
Really?
Oh, yeah, all day long. All day. That's why media people get so big-headed. Everyone
Not over
tells you you're
here.
Fabulous.
Well, okay, fair enough. Maybe so, in your world.
So I did a screen test originally I did a screen test for another show, and everyone told me I was fabulous, and I went back and I did 3 screen tests, and for the last screen test I went into Brown Thomas and I bought a whole load of clothes and spent a fortune because I thought I'd have to look fabulous if I was fabulous, and they never called me again.
So you dressed down then afterwards and you got the job, is that it?
I screen tested for a different show and I got that, and then it sort of all went from there, really.
All right. Now, the different show, I mean, like Freaky Eaters, I mean, like, you know, did you feel that you were some kind of an expert where you knew you could help sort of, how shall I put this, either oversized people or just people who had bizarre eating habits, and that you had some skill?
Well, I think, you know, in general practice, you get thrown into consultations with people about things that actually, you know a little bit about, but you don't know loads about. So we, as a GP, being a generalist, you're very well placed to actually take on things that mightn't necessarily be your niche, because you're always looking stuff up, or you're always sort of adapting what you know to suit the patient, because not a day goes by that someone comes in and I go, oh my God, I've never heard of that, or oh my God, I've never seen that, or wow, that's a bit of a confusing situation, I don't know how we're going to get you out of that one. So dealing with people's bizarre habits, and you know, a lot of the habits they had, whether they were eating, you know, we had a vegetarian who wouldn't eat vegetables, which was a bit bizarre. We see a lot of stuff in medicine where people have addictions, or they have, you know, compulsions to do things, or it's all about self-discipline and you know, managing their life in a holistic way. So I think, again, you know, through my basic degree and sort of my experience and work afterwards, you do learn a lot about how to manage situations.
So therefore, this opened up a whole new world to you, because somebody obviously has to do the research for a programme like this, and you suddenly found that there really are that many strange eating habits that you can make a whole damn TV series out of it.
Oh, absolutely. And anything I've ever done in television, I've learned from. I've learned loads. I mean, I've learned a massive amount, because there are all these unusual cases or on procedures that you've never heard of before that you're... You know, you experience, or your patients experience. So yeah, it's a great way of, you know, it's not just sitting there and stagnating, but you keep learning something every day.
Okay, but like, besides being a doctor, and I know you have to put the kind of I am a human being thing sometimes to the side, but when it comes to the regularity of flatulence and painful sex and snoring and bad breath and stretch marks and erectile dysfunctions and acnes and bunions and other stuff that really I shouldn't be talking about now because people are having their breakfast, what do you do? I mean, are you not... I'll tell you what you probably do. Over there in the corner is Bernadette Ann, but here is Pixie. Is that the way it is?
Oh, I don't mind. I mean, I'm quite used to... talking about all sorts of things. I sit on the train in the morning going into London and I'm writing an article about farting, for example, and, you know, the guy next to me...
Flatulence, please.
Flatulence. But, you know, the person next to me is reading the Financial Times or, you know, reading some important law document, and they're kind of going... And they look in and then they go, oh. So I don't have an issue about speaking about things, but I am a horrendous patient myself. I don't like going to the doctor. I try and avoid going to the doctor, and I'm a massive control freak when I do go to the doctor. I have a list of doctors, and if you're not on the list, I won't go to you. I'll solve the problem myself.
Well, you know, that's the really weird thing about it. You don't like to go to the doctor, just like so many people who might be too embarrassed to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
So with that as a problem for so many people, how is it that so many people don't have a problem going on TV in front of 3 or 4 million people?
Well, you know, we've been doing, as I'm sure Christian mentioned to you, we've been doing this show for a long time, 7 years, nearly 8 years. And particularly in the UK, people have got to know us, because in the UK, you're less likely to have a relationship with your doctor. You're less likely to even know the name of your GP. And actually what you see on the telly box when you sit down after you've had your dinner is a very, very small snapshot of a process that's been going on for about a year. And the bit when you go on the telly and, I don't know, you have your piles fixed or, you know, your varicose veins are done or whatever, your face looks much better or you're not overweight, that's kind of the icing on the cake, and that's closure. And they sit there with their family and friends and they say, oh God, I used to be like that and now I'm like this. So if you think about it, actually, you're on it for, say, 3 minutes. Mm. But actually, you've had a year of, you know, you've been going through the process for a year. So that's why people do it. And they get fixed. And many of them are desperate and they've had doors closed. And, you know, it's changed their lives completely because they've had a certain ailment. So you know, they're willing to do anything.
When you say you get fixed, all the things I've mentioned, and let's go for the ingrown toenails and the athlete's foot and the incontinence and everything else, can all of these things be fixed? And the best thing to do is to go to your doctor?
Absolutely. And if we can't fix it, if there isn't a cure for something, that doesn't mean we can't make it a bit better. You know, or if you've been told, actually, there's no cure for this 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Medicine changes. That's the beauty of science. You know, it changes all the time. And there might be something new. So it's always worth checking in and saying, listen, is there anything new about acne or psoriasis or arthritis or whatever? So yeah, it's always worth asking, that's for sure.
Okay, well then you yourself, I know, have admitted in the past to being a bit of a chronic snorer. What have you done about that? Did you go to your GP? Did you examine yourself?
I didn't examine myself, but I was examined by an ear, nose and throat specialist. Actually, two different ear, nose and throat specialists who stuck something up my nose and had a look and discovered that I have a wonky nose and I have some polyps up there, which I should have removed. But at the moment, my husband hasn't divorced me yet for the noise that I make, so I'm going to hold on to them.
And would it be a dangerous thing to get rid of polyps?
Not really. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, actually.
Is it? Yeah.
Anesthetic, whip them out, but again, because I'm a control freak.
Okay, and without necessarily diagnosing the nation over the airwaves live, just let's look at this here for a second. Would you say that a lot of people who have snoring problems have polyp problems?
No, I wouldn't.
All right.
I wouldn't. I'd say a lot of people who have snoring problems are overweight. It's a big issue, being overweight. And so if you're overweight and on a, you know, a Saturday night you have a bit of alcohol, you snore like a train. And there's a very serious condition called sleep apnea where you actually stop breathing. We see that very commonly in people who might have a collar size of 17 or greater. And that's a very dangerous condition because you're losing oxygen overnight because you literally stop breathing. So yeah, most snoring isn't caused by polyps, actually.
And what about like the level of stupidity of some people? And I'm looking at your husband here for a moment because at the age of 43, he was playing rugby and he broke his neck.
Oh,
and he probably thought he was 21. Now, most of us at 43 think we're 21 as well. But we don't necessarily go out and play schools rugby.
Yeah.
So how is he?
He's fine. I'm very anti-veterans rugby. I don't think people should be, you know, thinking they're Superman coming back after an absence of 10 years. He's fine. It was a very scary experience, and 3 millimetres more and he would have been paralysed or dead. But it was a slow recovery of 3 months, and I had to, again, because I'm a control freak, I had to find an Irish doctor in the UK that I trusted to look after him. But no, he's fine, thank you. But it's a scary thing. But rugby's a great game, and you know, when you're young and you're fit and you play it and you're top of your game, it's fine. But when you're an old fella who's decided that he'd just go out for the crack after a decade of absence.
Yeah, but any major rugby guy over the age of 50 or 60 would say the game has changed so much now that it is kind of dangerous. Instead of avoiding tackles, you have to go right through them. And the whole thing is there's a big debate going on about it. But I presume you're a Six Nations fan and all the rest of it. Therefore, you must follow Munster.
I do follow Munster, and I'm off to the first game next week in Rome. Actually.
Very good. Well, good luck with that. Let's just get back to a couple of things here, because you're on the telly doing... I'm going to get back to what you're doing in Cork as well. But these kind of freaky eating habits and all the rest of it, they've gone on to other things now with embarrassing bodies as well. I mean, I presume everywhere you go, and you're going to say that every doctor gets stopped somewhere and asked a question about some medical problem or whatever, but you're known, and above all, I mean, with Dr. Jessen last week as well, like, people think that they know this guy. People think they know you, and they see you solve problems pretty good in 3 minutes on the telly. So how many approaches would you get in an average month on the street or whatever?
Oh, God. I mean, well, if I go up the road from my house to the supermarket, I've never gone in there and haven't been stopped, ever. So, you know, people will stop you, or they'll say hello, or they'll say, can we have a photograph, or then they'll start lifting up their coat. Taxi drivers are the worst. taxi drivers, you know, I've examined quite a few taxi drivers. Because they, you know, you're in the back of the car and they're like chat, 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 and then they say, should we have a look at that now? London cabbies in particular.
Right.
So, that's an inevitable consequence of being a doctor, because you go to a wedding and you're a doctor,
yeah.
And people will go, I won't ask you anything now, I promise. They have two glasses of wine and they go, you know, it's inevitable.
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely, of course. I presume also the kind of, like a stand-up comedian, the kind of heckling type thing of across the road they'll see and they go, have you any cure for a big willy? Do you have answers for these kind of quick ripostes?
The favourite question, have you any cure for big willy? I just say, fold it in half.
Right, okay, fair enough. I'm sure that works, all right. Okay, well, now let's get a look at some other things here. Are you writing a novel these days, Pixie, yeah?
I'm trying to write one, yeah. I'm kind of stuck after the first chapter, so I need to get back on track again. I'm it was bad coming up to Christmas. Yeah, I'm trying to write a sort of a chick lit sort of Bridget Jonesy thing.
Oh, I see. Right, chick lit Bridget Jonesy kind of thing. Well, you were also talking at one stage, or you did mention, you dropped this hint at one stage that you wouldn't mind doing a TV program that was a specific kind of one-off of like a kind of a one-hour documentary. And one of the things you mentioned could be anything you said, and you said from crystal meth to, and particularly after Breaking Bad, I suppose, to abortion in Ireland. Would you have that in your head to do something like that, or was that just throwaway?
I think there are lots of, you know, there are lots of interesting things that have happened culturally for us over the last decade, really, with regards to abortion and also with regards to teenage pregnancy and availability of contraception. And, you know, things have changed radically, and society has changed, and our behaviours have changed massively because of what goes on online and what we can access and how we can meet people, etc. And people get themselves into all whole host of possible combinations and permutations of problematic situations. So I would be very interested in you know, looking at, I suppose, our general psyche and how we deal with our, you know, our sexuality and our, and, you know, pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies, and how we manage that, because I think we still haven't got that right.
And do you think if there was ever an Embarrassing Bodies kind of programme in Ireland, would you be interested at all, or is Ireland just really too small for a thing like that?
I'd love to do it in Ireland. I sense that people, it's very different in Ireland, isn't it? You know, I mean, I was in my surgery in Harley Street last week, and everyone in Ireland knows everyone else. A patient walked in from Ireland and he said, oh, your dad used to be my doctor. And I was like, what? In this city of, you know, 12 million people, and you walk by pure coincidence. So I think in Ireland, you'd go into work and you'd say, oh, did you see so-and-so from account?
Oh, absolutely.
On the telly last night. It's very different, isn't it? You know, everyone knows, like, 2 degrees of separation.
Yeah,
we're all either related
exactly,
or, you know, someone.
You need the 6 in America. So, by the way, would you ever think of giving up the GP work? Because, I mean, like, the doors have opened to such an extent now on the TV, and you've been doing it long enough, different kinds of programmes, 10 years. Like, have you ever sat down, OK, I want to write this novel, but by the same token, did you ever think, OK, maybe I should just be a kind of a, I don't know, a Dr. Kildare kind of person? I mean,
person...
No?
No, never, never. I mean, I love medicine. I love people, and they fascinate me. And, you know, I like, if I can help them, I'm very happy. You know, sometimes they drive you bananas. Sometimes they make you really sad. So, no, not at all. Latin medicine's what I, you know, worked hard to get where I am in medicine. And television is just an added bonus, really, for me.
And if you were asked to present the Eurovision in a few weeks, would you do it?
Well, I might. My mother would be very pleased if I did it.
Yeah, right. Okay, fair enough. Well, look, let's take a look at what we've got here, because you're over here in a couple of weeks, February 12th, to be precise, to open the I Wish initiative. Tell us more about it as you understand it.
So the I Wish, it's a collaborative, really, initiative between Cork Chamber of Commerce, Cork City and County Council, UCC, CIT. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to get young girls into STEM careers. So STEM careers, you know, there are probably parents listening saying, what in the name of goodness is a STEM career? It's a career in science, technology, engineering or maths. And we know that probably half of the students, you know, female students in Ireland, wouldn't even think of a STEM career because they feel it's more suited to boys than girls. And even parents and careers advisors are, we're not really pushing our girls, but maybe encouraging them or empowering them to say, actually, you know, science is pretty cool and it can take you to a lot of different places and you can have an amazing career and you can still have a life. So it's an initiative trying to encourage 1,000 students to think about STEM careers, look at the opportunities, and maybe influence their choices in transition year moving forward in terms of the subjects that they choose. Because you don't want to rule things out. You want to, you know, make sure that you have looked at everything. And if a science career is a possibility, then don't say that you're not going to do it.
And finally, just what about you? And like, you were late enough having a baby. I presume you're a very happy mother these days and it all worked out well. Would you have any recommendations as to not leaving career aside or going for the career or blah, blah, when you should have a baby or not?
I had I had a baby at 40, not because I had a fantastic career, but actually, but through my checkered history of fabulous men in my past life, I never really met anyone that I wanted to have a baby with, so therefore it kind of happened to me by default rather than design. I didn't say, oh, I'm going to have an amazing career, it just happened, that's how it evolved. So I think, you know, as a woman it's difficult. If you have a family life, then that is, it makes work a little bit more difficult, but it doesn't mean that you have to say no to careers. You've got to just work around things. And there'll always be things in life you have to work around.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
But have babies early. I mean, it's tiring when you're old.
Indeed. Okay. Well, listen, get some sleep. And thanks a million, Dr. Pixie McKenna, who's going
thank
to open
Dave.
Open the I Wish event at the Cork City Hall Thursday, February the 12th. And you can find out more at iwish.ie. Thank you very much, Pixie. Good luck.
Dave, thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye. Bye.